Welcome to the DJE Podcast, where you will learn about real estate investing from real life examples. Here's your host, Devin Elder.
Hey guys, welcome to the show. Quick note at the top here. If you have any multifamily questions, please feel free to email me at questions at DJE Texas. We'll incorporate that into future shows. And if you'd like to schedule a quick 10 or 15 minute call with myself and my team, you can also go to djetexas.com to set that up. My guest today, Mr. Travis Watts, very excited to jump into this. He's a full-time passive investor. He's been investing in multifamily real estate since 2009 in multifamily, single family, and vacation rentals. Travis is also the director of investor relations at Ashcroft Capital. Travis has invested in over 25 passive syndications between 14 different firms, and he now dedicates his time to educating others in the world of investing and has made it his mission to share passive investment strategies in order to help others achieve and maintain wealth in real estate. Without further ado, Travis, how are you?
Hey, doing well. Thanks so much on the show, Devin.
Yeah, thanks for jumping on. For folks that are not already familiar with you or in your universe, maybe you could give us a little background. Where are you based and how did you get into real estate?
I actually jumped into real estate in 2009 after most of the market meltdown had occurred. Got involved with single family. At the time, that's kind of all I knew. That was my world when someone said real estate investor. I just thought about buying a single family home and in your local market, didn't really know there was anything else I could get involved with. Just kind of got creative in the beginning, really. Had limited resources to work with, so did some house hacking and renting out rooms, having roommates, stuff like that. And just got more involved with fix and flips, a couple buy and holds, vacation rentals later on, and recap. That whole story was my intention from the very beginning to get into real estate was to be a passive investor. I really got in for the cash flow, and I got to see through my dad, who didn't get involved with real estate until his 50s. I got to see firsthand kind of the power of cash flow and what that meant for him. He was also in single family, which is why I got started in that path. Well, what ended up happening in my particular case was, as you know, he's more approaching retirement and, you know, this real estate's really going to be, you know, his job per se. Well, for me, I was on the opposite spectrum and I was working 100-hour work weeks in the oil industry as a W-2 employee and trying to manage this portfolio. And I ended up building myself two jobs unintentionally. And really, I just couldn't handle it. I couldn't manage it. And I tried putting some property managers on them, ended up having even more of a workload. So I really had to take a step back 2015 and say, you know, how are people doing real estate in a truly passive way? How am I supposed to scale, you know, this handful of portfolio, properties up to, you know, 50 or 100 single family homes? I don't understand how I could do that even with a property management company. So kind of went back to the drawing board, everything from up on real estate, get out of it, it's not for me, to, you know, people are doing this somehow, I got to figure. So went to some, you know, networking events, listened to podcasts, read a bunch of books, kept hearing syndication. People would throw that, you know, have you heard of syndication? Have you tried syndication? So didn't know what that meant at the time, found a local group out of Denver, which is where I'm primarily based now and where I basically grew up, and had a couple meetings with them, did one deal. They were syndication group, and you know, I was real skeptical, and you know, I just kind of sat back and I watched it for about 6 months, and I watched that, you know, the distributions came in monthly, the reporting came in monthly, and I just kind of fell in love with that model because I could finally see a path for me to be completely passive long term. And it wouldn't matter if I had one investment or if I had 1,000 investments, it wouldn't require my time or managing tenants and things like that. So that's kind of where I made the big switch in my investing career, was around 2015. Since then, I've liquidated all my single family portfolio, and my wife and I just invest, you know, full time in apartment syndications.
That's fantastic. I love it. I think a lot of people are going to resonate with that story. And that's my story as well. You get to a number of single families that you start thinking about having 100 of them and you just go, there's no way. There's just,
I mean,
it's too much minutia, too many utility bills. You don't have consolidation of management, on and on. And so was there a breaking point for you there with the single family stuff where it sounds like you had, you know, realized some of the success and seen that, hey, real estate investing is a great tool, but I'm running into some scalability issues. Was there like a breaking point there for you?
There absolutely was. Yeah. And it was at the point where I was taking more and more active projects on with single family, more of the fix and flip and more of the vacation rental, where it was requiring a ton of my time all the time. And then what happened was, I mentioned working in the oil industry. I was working locally, but I ended up taking a job overseas and I was working in the Middle East. And what that meant in reality was I was gone for about 37 days at a time without cell service or anything like that. So it was all done by email. And, you know, I had tenant issues and it was, you know, calling my girlfriend at the time, my wife now, hey, can you go collect this rent check? Can you go clean this unit over here? Can you go? and it's like so not sustainable in my life. And, you know, that was kind of that point where it's like, wait a second, you know, I couldn't even handle one more property like this. There's no way. So.
Yeah. One door, right? One additional door basically breaks the system versus, you know, you're a limited partner in another 200 units, like nothing, right? With a new syndication.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And the more I educated myself, the more that model made sense in other ways too, for diversification purposes. You know, I had my entire portfolio in Colorado.
Right.
You know, so in Colorado at the time was a great market, but I wouldn't necessarily want everything there in today's market. So this, you know, this model allowed me to do a little bit in, you know, Georgia and Florida and Texas and all over the place. So,
yeah, that's right. And you mentioned something really important earlier, which is the scalability and one additional deal as an LP or limited partner or passive investor really costs you almost zero more incremental time investment.
Right.
Right. A little bit upfront, obviously need to know the sponsor. You need to be educated. That costs some time and energy. But beyond that, getting in one more deal for you next quarter really doesn't have any time implications for you for the next 5 years, right?
That's exactly it. Yep. Yeah. All your time now is the upfront time, and it's vetting the sponsor and understanding the markets and, you know, following the news and the media and the migration trends and things like that, just to know which markets, you know, resonate best with you and kind of what your philosophy is. But most of that stuff is internal anyway, right? It's getting to know yourself and what's right for you as an investor. Once you identify these key points, it's actually quite easy. And it's just finding other groups or just groups in general that, you know, align with your philosophy. And then it's just vetting them individually and doing deals. So yeah, once you're in a deal, it's set and forget, you know, deploy your money and 5-7 years later, hopefully there's a positive outcome.
Yeah, no, that's perfect. So after you did that first syndication, you found a group, you took the plunge, you went in, and then you started to see some distributions and communications. What was the next step in the multifamily syndication world for you after that step?
A lot of education, a lot of self-education. You know, I realized that model was what I wanted to do, right? But I didn't fully understand, you know, all the market choices out there. Like I said, I had been heavily concentrated solely on Colorado at the time. So if you would have told me, you know, Atlanta's a great place to invest, I would have no idea what you're talking about. So I had to step back and do a lot of education and in the space, how it works and which sponsors have more track record and the experience and learning about, you know, minimum investments and, you know, 506Bs and 506Cs. There's just a lot to understand about how this whole thing works. So that was my next step. And I love attending seminars and events and, you know, networking. Meetups and things like that. So I kind of more or less, I took that approach in addition to podcasts and books and stuff. And, you know, that cuts your learning curve like crazy. If you have the, you know, willpower, we'll say, or the ability or the interest in doing that type of stuff. And I wish I had done that back in 2009 because my network was tiny and I'd only read a couple books total ever on real estate. And I just, you know, I could have done a lot of different things that would have brought me closer to my goal a whole lot sooner if I had applied the education piece to it.
Yeah, that's a good point. We live in a fantastic time now with access to these resources. And you spelled out a pretty simple formula that I think sometimes people I talk to overcomplicate. Building your network is this hugely important component. You go to events, read books, listen to podcasts. You put those things on the calendar or do those things, and you're going to start to see some pretty rapid progression.
Yeah, absolutely. And depending on your situation, like, you know, I had worked jobs in the past where I had a 45-minute commute to work, you know, each way. There's a perfect time, right? Get two podcasts in every single day. And, you know, it's astounding after 6 months of doing something like that, how much education you really take away. Even if you took 10% away from each thing you did, I mean, that's an incredible learning curve. And, there was 1 year where I had a goal to read a few books that year. So that's one a week. And I was able to accomplish that. And it just skyrocketed my, you know, my mindset and what I thought was, you know, I was capable of doing previously. So pretty fascinating stuff.
It sure is. Yeah. It's an interesting opportunity. And you start to see a lot of parallels. You start to listen to a lot of operators or a lot of investors. There's kind of some parallels with their story and it helps the puzzle pieces come together. I love it.
Yep. Absolutely.
So once you discovered, you've gone through this kind of single family investing route, you've seen how that could be pretty time intensive. You're working your W-2 job, you make the transition into passive investing, start growing your network there. Was there a target that you had to leave your job, or what did your goal look like at that point in your career, I guess?
Yeah, that's a great question. And again, you know, shoulda, coulda, woulda, I wish I had more defined goals at that point. All my goal was really, honestly, was to pursue work that was more meaningful to me. Mm-hmm. And at the time, that was not the oil industry in any way, shape or form. I was totally a mismatch in that industry. And it was great money and it was great pay and I had the ability, you know, physically work and all that kind of stuff. It was a great experience all in all, but I knew I couldn't sustain that just personally. I couldn't envision myself doing that same type of work in 30 or 40 years. It was never going to happen. So my only goal was not necessarily to quit my job per se, but be able to say, you know, I love my salary here. It's awesome. But if I could do this other job over here and learn and actually grow as a human and have half the salary, I would much rather prefer to do that work. And that's what I was able to accomplish through the cash flow, right? Through, you know, some people call it, you know, financial freedom, financial independence. To me, that's what it was all about. It's just being able to, I wanted to pursue. I call that time freedom, you know, mm-hmm. It kind of just frees up your time and what it is you want to do with your time and gives you options. And so that was really what my pursuit was all about, even from day one in 2009.
When you first started looking at real estate investments, it was always pursuing that time freedom.
It was. And I, you know, back then I was so naive. I had no idea how I was going to get there. I just knew real estate is interesting and fun. And so I was doing all these different things, but kind of going down the wrong path for what I really wanted. But it ended up working out, but it took a little longer than it should have.
Yeah, I think it's easy to look back and say that, but you know, there's all choices we would change, and you know, you're in a great spot now, so all's well that ends well, right?
Yeah, that's right, 100%.
So you've gone through the track, the progression here. Was there a big triumphant moment leaving your W-2, or was it just kind of a natural progression, or how did that work out for you?
So at the time, I really had just fallen in love with investing. I've always been, you know, voracious, you know, budgeter and, you know, live below your means. And I could really have that willpower to cut expenses and things like that. But I was really more interested in how do I grow and expand at that point. So the first thing I did, believe it or not, is I went into working for a brokerage firm to learn Wall Street. I wanted to learn stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. I thought, man, if I could master real estate and I could master that stuff, I would be a master of finance, you know? And I ended up really not liking the Wall Street model. I really not liking how that system works and comes together. And when I kept weighing it out with firsthand experience in real estate, it's like, I just couldn't see how that really would fit into my portfolio. And the more, you know, companies or the company I was working for was trying to push, you know, sell these mutual funds, it's like, I just couldn't do it. You know, it was just a real big conflict of interest within myself. And so that didn't last very long. And so it ended up that I was affiliating and working for some syndication groups, right? I mean, after that, that's kind of the route that I took. And one of the groups that really aligned with my philosophy almost in every way, from the asset type to the markets to monthly distributions, the whole picture, was Ashcroft Capital with Joe Fairless. So I'd met Joe, I did one deal with them, and their team, their communication, their track record, professionalism, that model was just perfect at that time for me, and still is in many ways. So I ended up doing like 9 deals with them. And so that's how the affiliation came to be as director of investor relations with Ashcroft Capital. So again, to my core purpose of pursuing work that I love and enjoy, that, you know, I personally grow from, you know, that's where I'm at today. You know, financial freedom doesn't mean that you have to retire and quit working and just go golf or sit on the couch for the rest of your life. It just means, you know, doing something that you love, and that's where I'm at. So
that's great to hear. I love it. I had an experience after I quit my day job, which was a multi-year process, where I really took advantage of all the free time, golf and doing this and that. And I think that lasted about 3 months, and I really got antsy. I probably work now more than I ever have in my life, but it's my company and I love it. I mean, we're having this interview on Monday after Thanksgiving, and I literally tell myself TGIM sometimes. And it's not that it's just not challenging, but I love sinking my teeth into it. And you know, I want to have the cash flow to be retired, but yeah, I don't want to sit around. I definitely love to work.
Exactly.
It's got to be on the right things, right?
Yep. Totally agree.
I wanted to ask you a question, Travis, about the monthly versus quarterly distributions. So what are your thoughts, you know, as an investor, one versus the other, and as, you know, investor relations director for Ashcroft, where you're having conversations with investors, what are some of the pros and cons, I guess, between a monthly and a quarterly distribution, and how do you like it as an investor?
Sure. Yeah, that's a great question. And to me, everybody's different, obviously, but to me, being that, you know, that is the bulk of the income that I make, right? It's passive income. It's like, would you rather get a paycheck once a month or once a quarter? You know, I prefer monthly. It's just easier to keep, you know, a pulse on things. And usually a group that's going to do a monthly distribution is also going to do monthly reporting, right? Give you some kind of, you know, pulse on the project. And again, do you want to know how your project's doing every month or every quarter? You know, for everyone's different. For me, it's every month. And so, you know, from the LP, from the limited partner standpoint, I would say the majority of folks I talk to would prefer monthly distributions. Now, to flip that coin and say, now you're on the active side, you're the general partner, do you want to write, you know, 12 checks a year or 4? You know, I totally get why you would want to do quarterly. You know, it's a lighter load. It's a little easier. The reporting can, you know, you have more time to prepare that, you know, once per quarter. So it's kind of that balance between, you know, capacity and workload, you know, on yourself, and then what the investors are looking for. I really try to target groups that do monthly distributions. It's not an all killer if they don't. We definitely have some holdings in our portfolio that are quarterly, just because we love the project so much or the group that we kind of overlook that. But yeah, I mean, that's a big deal to me. So that's one of the top priorities that I look for personally.
Yeah. Interesting. Thanks for the feedback. So you have a lot of these conversations with prospective investors. What are you finding, any common themes there? Somebody that, you know, has been in the stock market for years and has never really branched out into a syndication. Obviously there's a lot of kind of the same questions and fears, but is there kind of a recurring theme that you're seeing with folks the first time around? You know, you talk to that investor that's evaluating a project for the first time.
Absolutely. Something that was so eye-opening to me is when I had first heard about syndication, I thought, oh man, these are super sophisticated, super experienced real estate people, right? That know so much more than me. And I'm the newbie and this, you know, but it's funny to find out that the majority, in my opinion, in my experience, the majority of people that are investing in syndications are usually just high income earners in right. any industry. So many engineers, doctors, dentists, lawyers, attorneys, you know, business owner, entrepreneur. So in fact, most of them, in my opinion, have never even really done real estate on their own. Like they didn't start in single family and then progress into multifamily. It was just, they stock so much into their 401k and their IRA that it's like, you know, I want to diversify a little bit. What else can I do with some of this income? And so they choose to put it into real estate. I think a lot of people realize real estate's a great asset class to be in, but don't necessarily realize you can use a self-directed IRA to invest with, and that you have these totally passive options and not publicly traded options like a real estate investment trust, but something that's uncorrelated to the market, you know, that can produce monthly income for you. So,
yeah, that's fantastic. There are retirement options there. And, you know, I'm a little bit jealous hearing about high income earners that never flipped a house, right? Going, man, I wish that was, wish I would have skipped all that too. It could be painful, as you know.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's good. There's lots of tools out there for folks to invest in passively. Well, that's good. What do you see at this kind of, you know, we're having this conversation late 2019, yep. You know, a lot of demand for these multifamily assets. What mm-hmm. are you guys seeing kind of in the marketplace as you go out and acquire these assets? Anything, you know, specific going on to this point in the cycle?
Yeah. So this has kind of been interesting too. So my wife and I have invested with a lot of different groups in the space, and each group's going to have their own core philosophy on what they right. think about recessions and what they think about the market cycle and all of this. Plus they're going to bring to the table their own experience level and track record. Some invested through the last recession. Some have never been through a recession. So you kind of need to find those groups that resonate with your core philosophy. And the philosophy that I like is that the group is going to continue seeking deals as possible through a recession, which sounds kind of crazy to some people. Some are of the belief of, you know, let's sit back, let's hoard our cash, and let's just wait 4 or 5 years and jump back in. And that's fine, you know, for those folks. But I think there's always a deal to be had, and some will have, you know, mismanaged, you know, their business plan basically, and unfortunately are going to be losing some properties in the next downturn. That's just an opportunity for a different group to step in, pick it up at a discount, and then re-implement, you know, maybe the right business plan or the right debt structure for that. So again, back to, you know, yourself and your core belief and understanding your own philosophy. It takes a lot of self-study and some soul searching, but you know, that's kind of my belief. I believe that we're going to go into a recession. Historically speaking, multifamily's performed exceptionally well through downturns. I like, you know, in a sense, kind of the more units, the better in a way, a little more diversification, a little more cash flow, you know, 10 people move out, no big deal, you know, but then you go look at like a fourplex or something, a quad, then it's, you know, you can't really afford to lose two or three tenants. Because then you're going to be underwater with it. So that's kind of my belief in it. I don't just invest in multifamily. We do some self-storage and some ATM investing and some alternative, you know, models. But right now, our focus is recession-resistant investments. And I've always been a value-add type of person, even if we're not talking about real estate, if we're just talking about buying a car. I believe in, you know, buying that ugly car that needs some work and fixing it up. And now you've got a cushion and some margin sure. to where you're going to have some value in there that was forced in. You took something, made it better. Now it's worth more. I love that philosophy versus buying the brand new car and hoping it appreciates, or, you know, the collector car goes up in value. I don't like that strategy. So
got it.
Or beliefs.
Yeah. I love it. It's the forcing appreciation model and proactively creating some value in that asset, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
You know, you brought up a good point about mismanagement. And, you know, I kind of had a belief a number of years ago as I was transitioning from single family stuff to larger commercial, that somebody that had the wherewithal to buy a $5 or $10 or $20 million building also had the financial and business acumen to manage it well. And it turns out that is a completely false belief. You know, over the weekend, I got several text messages from some friends on a property that we sold not too long ago. And it's in the paper for all kind of, you know, I'll just say management issues. You know, I don't want to throw anybody under the bus, but this is not too long after we sold it. And it was a perfectly kind of, I don't want to give away too many details, but sold it in good shape. And then, and then now it's, you know, now it's getting bad press and so forth. And then we buy properties too. And I'm sure you guys are in the same boat where a lot of it is kind of a management play. So that does create opportunity. And I like what you said about buying kind of in any market cycle. Real estate is very specific to the one asset. You can have one asset across the street from a similar asset and one's a great deal and one's not. And so that can create a lot of opportunity for us.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, just kind of to make that point a little clearer, the way I see it is if you have a belief that we go into a recession, you know, I'm not even looking at properties. I'm sitting back and I'm going to hoard cash and wait. But what if you were able to grab a property at a 60% discount? You're saying you wouldn't do that and that wouldn't be a good deal?
Right.
You know, so it's like, just leave that option open, you know, as a philosophy. That would be my take on that.
Yeah, it's a great approach. And I think trying to time a top of a market, you know, you got people that might have been hoarding cash since 2013. And
yeah, exactly.
You've been in cash since 2013. You missed a lot of good stuff. So I tend to agree that proceed cautiously, and it's always case by case, deal by deal. But there are opportunities there for sure. So yep, we talked a little. Yep, go ahead.
I was just going to say, there's ways to limit your downside risk too, right? With the type of debt you're putting on it. You know, if we're at a top of a market cycle, if that's of your belief, or statistically speaking, we kind of are, then maybe not putting, you know, a 2-year bridge loan on a project, or having hard money, right, to do your rehab and hoping, well, I'm going to sell this in the next 12 months or something like that. You know, put a 5 to 10 year, you know, debt structure on that, so that you have a little bit of leeway. So you're not going to be forced to sell or refinance, you know, in the middle of a downturn. I mean, there's just things like that to look for as a passive investor, or if you're doing your own deals, you know, just to help limit your risk.
Yeah, that's such a great point. That's kind of, that's usually the number one thing I'll bring up with our investors, is somebody says, what's the risk on this deal? And I said, well, you're standing on a train track. The train's coming at you. It will kill you. But it's 5 years away, or it's 8 years away. And so as long as you have a plan to get off that track when the train is still 3 or 4 years away, you're going to be just fine. So, you know, I think that debt maturity is a big one. And as operators, you got to make sure you got plenty of room to basically just ride through a recession, which, to your point, historically are a lot shorter than expansions. And you just need to be in a position to hang on through that whenever the next one comes.
Agreed.
So we talked a little bit, Travis, at the top about a resource that you might have for our listeners here. And also, I want to thank you for coming on today. If somebody wants to reach out, spend a few minutes on the phone with you, get to know you and Ashcroft, what's a good avenue for that?
Sure. And I'm always open just to talk in real estate, multifamily, sharing experience with anything, everything. I do typically, you know, 15, 20 minute calls, things like that. Best way to start that process us is by email. You can reach me at travis@ashcroftcapital.com, travis@ashcroftcapital.com. And to your point, I do have a free passive investor resource guide. It's not just one of those one or two pagers. It's very in-depth on how to vet sponsors, how to vet markets, you know, again, to pretty much every topic we've talked about, from single family and multifamily and the So that website, you can get the free passive investor resource guide at www.ashcroftcapital.com/passive investor. That's ashcroftcapital.com/passive investor. That's a 20, 30 pager. That's just got everything that we basically talked about on this podcast: how to vet sponsors, critical questions to ask, markets to look at, and why you might want to look at particular markets, things like that. So free resource guide. And yeah, feel free to reach out anytime. Appreciate you having me on the show, Tim.
Travis, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks so much.
All right. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the DJE Podcast. For more information, please go to djetexas.com.